U.S. President Donald Trump has put something new on the political table, a declaration of a national emergency. It is an effort to bypass Congress to build a wall along the southern U.S. border with Mexico. The action also sets up a series of legal challenges that could help determine the limits of U.S. presidential power. Among the first to challenge the president, the state of California. AP's Warren Levinson has a report.
Governor Gavin Newsom says the details haven't been worked out yet, but California plans to lead a lawsuit to block the declaration of a state of emergency. Newsom says the state will be harmed more than any other by it, from a misuse of federal money to loss of control of the National Guard to increased drug smuggling.
He is arguing to make the drug problem in America worse by this action, not better.
California has repeatedly taken the president to court the last 2 years. Attorney General Javier Becerra says when this one is filed, it will be the state's 46th lawsuit against Trump. I'm Warren Levinson.
The Vatican said today Pope Francis has defrocked disgraced former U.S. Cardinal Theodore McCarrick and that the decision is definitive and admits of no further recourse or appeal. Vatican spokesperson Alessandro Gisotti.
The Congresso of the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith, at the conclusion of a penal process, issued a decree finding Theodore Edgar McCarrick, Archbishop Emeritus of Washington, D.C., guilty of the following delicts while a cleric: solicitation in the sacrament of confessions, and sins against the sixth commandment with minors and with adults, with the aggravating factor of the abuse of power.
The 88-year-old McCarrick was ordained a priest in 1958. He was made a cardinal in 2001. For all the day's news, you can go to voanews.com online or simply use the VOA mobile app. This is VOA News. Egypt's military said there was a clash with suspected jihadists today at a checkpoint on the Sinai Peninsula. A military spokesman told AFP that 7 militants were killed in the attack in the rest of North Sinai, while 15 soldiers were either killed or wounded. Haitians are in the streets of the capital, Port-au-Prince, again this weekend, as the political turmoil continues to worsen. President Jovenel Moïse says he understands people's economic pain and has called for calm, a call which has so far been largely ignored. Demonstrators are demanding the president be ousted with the help of the international community. The UN Human Rights Office is calling on the Philippine judiciary to drop all charges against journalist Maria Ressa. It says pursuing the case threatens an independent media in the country. Ressa is the founder and CEO of the independent news outlet Rappler and a frequent critic of Philippine President Rodrigo Duterte. Here's VOA's Lisa Schlein from Geneva.
The UN Human Rights Office is calling for a thorough independent review of all charges against Ressa and other media professionals in the Philippines. It urges the judiciary to safeguard its own independence by throwing out cases that clearly are politically motivated. It says the charges are not in line with international human rights standards. It adds they also trample on the rights of journalists to carry out their professional duties safely and without fear of reprisal. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Political uncertainty in Nigeria took a turn for the worse today with news that the presidential and parliamentary elections have been postponed for a week. The country's Electoral Commission chairman canceled the balloting just hours before the polls were scheduled to open. Mahmoud Yabuku told reporters it was a difficult but necessary decision for successful elections to take place.
The commission came to the conclusion that proceeding with the election as scheduled is no longer feasible. Consequently, the commission has decided to reschedule the presidential and National Assembly elections.
The eventual Nigerian voting is expected to feature a tight race between incumbent President Muhammadu Buhari and his main challenger, former Vice President Atiku Abubakar. More than 200 tons of U.S. humanitarian aid intended for Venezuela is scheduled to begin arriving just across the border in Colombia today, delivered by U.S. military cargo planes. The aid will be delivered to Cucuta, where other food and medical supplies are being stored. Venezuelan opposition leader and self-declared interim president Juan Guaido has pledged that food and other aid will start flowing into his country in a week. Gene Randall, VOA News.
Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Douglas Mpuga.
The Commission has decided to reschedule the presidential and National Assembly elections to Saturday, 23rd February 2019.
Presidential and parliamentary elections in Nigeria are postponed for a week.
This is what we have to offer on the table as Africa. We have indigenous stories, okay? There's so many indigenous stories within us that the rest of the world can enjoy.
And we look at challenges faced by the nascent African film sector. Those stories and more coming up right here on Nightline Africa. Voters in Nigeria woke up Saturday morning to the news the presidential and parliamentary elections have been postponed for a week. Professor Mahmoud Yakub, chairman of the Nigeria Independent National Electoral Commission, INEC, announced the postponement of elections just hours before polls opened. The postponement followed a late-night emergency meeting between the Electoral Commission chief, security officials, election observers, and other stakeholders at the electoral body's headquarters in the capital, Abuja. For reaction, my colleague Peter Klote in Lagos spoke with Olawale William, a polling agent in Maryland, Ikeja, Lagos, for the main opposition People's Democratic Party, PDP.
When you heard the chairman of the Independent National Electoral Commission, Professor Yakubu, saying that the elections have been postponed for a week to allow voting materials and to allow INEC to ensure that the polls will be free, fair, transparent, and credible, what was your reaction?
My reaction was that I felt so bad based on what INEC were promising the whole Nigeria before the election took place, that they 2 months ahead ago, they made it clear to every citizen of this great country that they are ready for the election and everything has been done perfectly ready. So for them to come out very unexpected at or very strange hours to tell us this election there's need to be postponed for one or two reasons or whatever, it showed clearly that Nigeria has no confidence in them. But they made it clear to us 2 months ahead that every necessary things were on ground and there was no natural disaster in the country. No riot, no chaos. So why now?
But there are instances of 10 INEC offices that were burnt. Some voting materials were allegedly stolen or disappeared. Don't you think INEC needs to prepare adequately well in order to ensure transparency and credibility of the elections?
If what you said is truly, you know, real, as you said, from the information that you got from the INEC official, it shouldn't be at this ugly house. It should have been made known to us 2 days or 3 days before the election. It shouldn't be at this time where Nigeria has 100% prepared and there was no war, there was no crisis, as I said earlier. So you need not to be told that they have skeleton in their cupboard together with the ruling party.
Why are you bringing the ruling party? Because the ruling party supporters are equally disappointed.
You see, according to what you said, that they are equally disappointed, I disagree with you. How? Here is my point. Even the ruling party made it known to Nigerians that everything is necessary, ready, security and all that. So we need not to be told that there's something going behind between the INEC official, starting from the hierarchy of the INEC official and the ruling party. You need not to be told that there was a shoddy game going on there.
But you have to present a credible evidence to substantiate or back what you are saying. You can't just throw things up in the air with just suspicion and say there's something shoddy going on.
That's correct. Without much ado, the chairman party, APC ruling party chairman, known as Comrade Adams Oshiomhole, he said it recently In fact, it's not up to 4 hours that everything is necessarily prepared. And whatever they said, they should prove it. It means they, you, like I said, I will continue saying it, just as millions of Nigerians know that APC and INEC, they have skeleton in their cupboard. Not that we are put, we are just trying to hide under the umbrella of excuse or whatever. That's the reality, because the ruling party are 100% ready. So why not, the opposition party rather, they are 100% ready. So why not?
So let me ask you, when did you hear about the announcement? Because I was told you were ready to come to this polling station to be a polling agent for the main opposition, the People's Democratic Party or PDP. When did you hear about this news from INEC?
Without saying much about that, I heard information around 4 o'clock. 4 o'clock.
This morning.
It was a rumor then. They were like, it seemed that they will postpone this. Is this same or real? Is it real or not? They said they are not yet sure. So it was around 6:30 a.m. Everybody were so disappointed that the election has been postponed. Because trust, yesterday night, from 11 to 12:30, we couldn't get any news. 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock, we couldn't. So it was very unfortunate that at this ever-ready period of time that we heard this unfortunate news that the election has been postponed.
Now, so you have to go back to the drawing board and prepare, now that it's official, that you have a one-week delay. What is the PDP's reaction to that?
PDP have, not just PDP alone, other political party, and including PDP as well. We are, like I said, we are 100% prepared. In fact, we need not to be told that we need to get ourselves prepared. We are 100% ready and prepared as it is. So there's no doubt about that. So I don't know of that of a ruling party called APC.
That was Alawale William, a polling agent of the main opposition People's Democratic Party, PDP, in Maryland, Ikeja, Lagos. Peter Kilot also caught up with Usman Joe Yusuf, a business owner in Lagos.
Usman.
Yes, sir.
We all heard this morning, a few hours before the elections, the polls were supposed to be opened. You heard INEC chairman announcing a one-week delay of the election. When you heard him speak, what was your reaction?
I was so bad and confusing. So that is my reaction, because I was surprised. You know, we are all prepared to go out and vote, and suddenly we hear that they have postponed the election. It's very, very bad, sir.
I saw some people who were ready to go to some of the polling stations,
yes,
and then they only to be told that they couldn't vote. What was your experience talking to some of your friends in your neighborhood?
The only experience I have is that such thing has never happened before. I don't know, but I was hearing from a background that they stole the voters' paper, this thing,
ballot papers,
so that the police caught some people that stole it. That was why they postponed it. So we are all surprised. So,
what about some of your friends who traveled back to their hometowns to go and vote? I understand you spoke with some of them. What did they tell you?
They said they feel bad, the same thing. So everybody, no one is happy. Nobody is happy in Lagos because of the issue. So everybody was so bad, because I called, they called me, they were asking me what is going on in our country. I said, I don't know. So that is the system of Nigeria. So that is it.
But some people are also saying that it's only for a week to allow INEC or the Electoral Commission to make sure all the sensitive materials, the voting materials, are sent to all the states and all polling stations to allow Nigerians to vote in peace. Why do you think that is not good enough?
I don't have anything much more to say again, because normal, I don't really follow politics like that. So it is when they ask us to come out to vote, then I'll come out and vote. So I don't really follow politics, something like that. That's the little one I can say.
Now let's join my colleague Peter Kilote in Lagos. Peter, the chairman of the Nigerian Independent National Electoral Commission, INEC, Muhammadu Yakub, has just had a press conference. Did he shed more light on what led to the postponement?
Yes, he did. He was saying that there were some logistical challenges and there were also attempts to sabotage the work of INEC, including the burning down of the offices which are aimed at disrupting the work of INEC and undermining the election, including burning of ballot, PVC or the cards that are needed for prospective voters to use in order to identify themselves before they are allowed to vote. So he basically gave a sum up of some of the challenges logistically that they faced and that there was nothing to do with security or monetary or funds that they needed to organize the elections.
Yeah, Peter, it's not the first time that the Nigeria Electoral Commission has had to postpone the elections just before the election, but this was just a few hours to polling. What's the general mood of the people who are supposed to vote today?
Well, Douglas, people are frustrated. I went into the street in Lagos just to get a few reactions following the postponement. Around 2:45 a.m. local time, people had gone to the polling stations because they were not aware that the elections were postponed. So they had gone there, including a member of the main opposition party who is a polling agent. And they got there only to be told that elections are not coming on. So they were frustrated. And all across the country, monitoring local reports, they are displeased with what is going on. However, some party officials of opposition groups are commending the chairman of the Electoral Commission for being bold enough to make sure that his commitment to free and fair elections are upheld in spite of the challenges. So they are giving him some commendation for being bold to postpone the election despite the inconvenience that he has caused a lot of people who might have traveled out of their regular place of abode to their hometowns to vote.
And we also had reports, talking of political parties, of the two main ones blaming each other for this postponement.
Indeed, the ruling APC or the All Progressive Congress were not happy. They blamed the People's Democratic Party or the PDP, the main opposition party, of being behind some of these problems that the electoral chief outlined. However, the PDP is saying that why should we be blamed when you are running the government and, so to speak, you are organizing the election and blaming us, your rivals, for undermining it. However, they said the president or the government has failed, and that is why they are blaming them. These are the accusations and counter-accusations going on.
Lastly, is there a feeling among the people that this postponement may affect the voter turnout in a week's time?
That is a concern for many civil society and local observers here in Nigeria, particularly Lagos, because they said it will be unlikely that those who spend a lot of money to travel outside Lagos to go to their various villages to be able to gather enough funds to return there just to go and vote and come back. They assume or they are calculating and anticipating that there could be a little drop, if not a sharp drop, of people going to vote. Because earlier on when VOA spoke with some of the people here, they even said they were not going to vote anyway because they thought the election results had been predetermined and that the system has not helped them. So they didn't find the need going out to vote, basically undertaking their civic duty. These are the concerns going on here, Douglas.
All right, let's leave there. Thank you very much, Peter.
Thank you.
In Egypt, the military has said there was a clash at a checkpoint Saturday between suspected jihadists and the military on the Sinai Peninsula. A military spokesman told AFP in a statement that 7 militants were killed in the attack in the restive North Sinai, while 15 soldiers were either killed or wounded. Army spokesman Tamar al-Rafai said in the statement that an officer and 14 non-commissioned soldiers were killed or wounded. Farai said security forces would go after the terrorist elements to eliminate them, in his words. Australia's centre-right government says it will reopen a controversial detention centre on Christmas Island after a historic defeat in Parliament. From Sydney, Phil Massa reports.
The Australian government is turning up the heat in the fraught debate about asylum seekers. Reeling from an embarrassing defeat in Parliament, the Prime Minister Scott Morrison says new laws making it easier for sick migrants held offshore to be treated in Australia would encourage more asylum seekers to come by sea.
To anyone who thinks they should get on a boat, I'm here and I will stop you. My job now is to do everything within my power and in the power of the government to ensure that what the Parliament has done to weaken our borders does not result in boats coming to Australia.
The detention centre on Christmas Island, an Australian territory in the Indian Ocean, is to be reopened. It had been in operation since 2003, but was closed last year. Critics say the Prime Minister's decision to reopen the facility 300 kilometres south of Indonesia is an attempt to scare voters about border security ahead of an election expected in May. Opponents point out that the medical evacuation law passed this week covers only people already detained offshore and won't apply to new arrivals. Professor Alex Riley from the University of Adelaide says many migrants will know the restrictions that Australia will impose.
Refugees are much better at sourcing information. The availability of smartphones and the growing information on the internet means that people soon work out what the opportunities really are. People absolutely will be looking at the details. Before you jump on a boat and risk your life going to another country with the prospect of spending years and years in detention on an island, you're going to look at the details of what the law really says.
If you risk your life and your money trying to reach Australia illegally, you will fail. You have nothing to gain by trying to reach Australia illegally by boat, but you risk losing everything.
Since 2013, the Australian Navy has been turning or towing back asylum seeker boats. There has been unrest at detention camps in the South Pacific, where other migrants intercepted at sea have been held. They've been told they will never be allowed to settle in Australia. On Manus Island in Papua New Guinea, refugees have welcomed news that they can go to Australia for medical treatment. But Khalid Hamad, who fled Sudan, says his long-term future remains uncertain.
It's not a permanent solution to us, yeah. To go to Australia just to get the treatment, that's it. And what after that? It's not a permanent solution, just temporary solution.
While the impassioned political debate has focused on migrants arriving by boat, whose numbers have dwindled in recent years, little attention is given to a record number of people, mostly from China and Malaysia, who arrive by plane, seeking asylum in Australia. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
The African film sector is largely a nascent one, with the notable exception of Nigeria's Nollywood and South Africa. But why are African movies much harder to access for Africa's billion-plus population, and how can filmmakers monetize their craft? The answers form the crux of the report by VOA correspondent Ade Gondo on the African film industry.
While African television programs have proliferated via platforms such as MultiChoice Africa, the same cannot be said for the continent's film content, to the extent that viewers are often unaware of theatre releases from other African countries. Adze Uga, Nigerian but South Africa-based award-winning television and film producer of popular series such as Zone 14 and Isbaya, speaks on the subject of film distribution within the continent of Africa.
The reality is, the distribution system of having films go to cinemas and then be seen by a mass audience is the best way to basically monetize a film. It's the only way to actually make a film make its money back in the shortest amount of time. Countries like America, India, China all depend on the cinema network for films to actually make a profit. Recently, we have the VODs that have come up, you know, the lack of Netflix, Amazon, Hulu, but there's still not a mass market mechanism at the moment. The business model for making films for the majority of South Africans is still a work in progress, and we believe as time goes on, you know, the landscape will change.
In South Africa, the distribution networks of cinemas formerly owned by Fox were taken over by Steyr Kinoga and Afrikaans Outfit. And due to apartheid policies, they have tended to service a white suburban demographic. Industry players question the logic of serving a small niche.
And suburban South Africa is just, maybe a 3 million man strong market. And that has been the case. And that has been the challenge with South African cinema over the decades, that the majority, which are black South Africans that reside in townships, don't have cinema networks or cinema chains or cinema facilities present in their communities. So they have to basically transport themselves to the suburbs, to the malls, where the cinemas are situated, so where they have to pay premium prices and all sorts of other added costs to be able to enjoy a film, whereas the suburban dweller doesn't really have to, you know, do more than just step out of their houses, walk into the malls, and boom, the cinema and the movies are there for them to enjoy. So the challenge has been that, yes, we don't have cinemas that are extensively situated in South African townships, and that has been the major factor that has basically mitigated against the black South African cinema taking off.
Uga and others remain hopeful that the situation will change as pressure mounts due to successful productions such as Matwetwe by South African filmmaker Kagi Solediga. Matwetwe has been a box office release since its January 25 release and currently sits as number 3 on the charts behind international films Aquaman and Bohemian Rhapsody. Matwetwe is being hailed as an authentic and compelling depiction of South African township hustle. This is a point which Zambian filmmaker Beki Ngoma believes gives African films a competitive advantage.
The biggest opportunity that we have right now as Africa in cinema is Hollywood has run out of stories. The rest of the world is looking at Africa. Black stories are the new gold. The success of Black Panther was an eye-opener, okay? So this is what we have to offer on the table as Africa. We have indigenous stories. Okay, there's so many indigenous stories within us that the rest of the world can enjoy. But yeah, and that is an opportunity. What do we need? Connection to the market, connection to investment. And the next thing is networking. Networking is a great opportunity for African filmmakers, because the more we network, the more we broaden our sphere of understanding our market.
Funding is indeed a challenge, with governments generally slow to recognize the sector's economic potential on the continent. Matwetwe, for example, is based on a 20-year-old script and was co-funded with the help of celebrated music producer and disc jockey Black Coffee, who is a Miami and Ibiza nightclub scene regular. Caro Njoroge, a Kenyan filmmaker, sees a bright future for her country's film sector through collaborative effort.
Last year we had two international countries. We had the Argentina and we had the Israelis coming on board to be able to just to give us an opportunity to for co-production. So again, the future is bright in terms of opportunities. There's a thirst for Kenyan stories, or there's a thirst for African stories, as we've seen. And the fact that we have a lot of government goodwill in terms of
other opportunities for monetization of the film sector in Africa include online digital platforms such as Netflix, Kwese, and iRoko. Still, according to Framing the Shot, a report commissioned by 234 Media, a privately owned entity based in Kenya, creating a sustainable film industry in Africa will require investing in an effective network of brick-and-mortar cinemas. Reporting for VOA, this is Adi Gondo.
This is VOA and you're listening to Nightline Africa. And coming up in the second half of the program, our Saturday music spot from our collection of music from across the continent. And now it's time for a Saturday music spot. Yes, time to relax and enjoy great music from Africa.
Make me the love. Oh, 1+1 is 1. Now, be the arithmetic when go keep us together. Can nobody love you like I do, my baby. Oh, 1 + 1 = 1. Now it be the melody, I go to play you forever. Can nobody treat you like I do, my baby. Oh, baby. Take you out tonight for a dinner, doing things right like a dream. Is that I will be, see my baby, wanna give me, hey. I know they said anybody, even when the things they waste, but don't worry. Now then I go, they love you better, treat you well, no matter the weather, you go for my tata. It's the dream of every man to get a fine girl like you. We go be like Bryce and you. Baby, me, I'm gonna make me the love. I say, make me the love. Boy, you make me the love. Jay, make me the love. Keep us together. Can nobody love you like I do, my baby. Oh, 1 + 1 = 1. Now it be the melody, I go to play you forever. Can nobody treat you like I do, my baby. Oh, man. You are the personality, the sugar in my tea, my testimony. You see, the probability is equal to unity of our matrimony. This love is raised to the power of infinity. Girl, now you the ginger, my dignity. Hey. Keep us together. Can nobody love you like I do, my baby. Oh, 1 + 1 = 1. The melody, I go to play you forever. Can nobody treat you like I do, my baby.
Tanta boca pra beijar, eu só quero.
esquece o mundo e vai.
Feeling good inside right now. I can't wait to make you.
Kutua kwenye bate au bustani ya maua, mwambie nampenda ananisumbua, mwambie nampenda japo kauchubua njiwa. Peleka salamu, salamu zangu, mimi sina hali, naona mawingu. Nyota, nyota, mwezi, kizunguzungu, hali so shwari, haki ya Mungu. Nimeshazama kwenye penzi, mwaweza sema nimepangawa, mwambie siniwezi.
Possibility. Dali wami, stand wasa.
for the both of us.
And that was our Saturday Music Spot. I sincerely hope you enjoyed the music. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of the Voice of America. From the rest of the Nightline Africa team, Managing Editor Shaka Salim, Producer Saida Hamdun, we thank you for joining us tonight and join us tomorrow Sunday. I'm Douglas Mpuga.
This is VOA News. I'm Gene Randall. Washington.